I will call the remote hearing of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. Today is January 26, 2021. This meeting is held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. To establish a quorum, the clerk will take the roll.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick, present.
Hanson, present. Waslewick, Amy.
Waslewick, present.
Waslewick, present. Heinzman, Josh.
Heinzman, present.
Heinzman, present. Akam, Patty.
Akam, present.
Akam, present. Acklin, Susan.
Acklin, present.
Acklin, present. Backer, Jeff.
Backer, present.
Backer, present. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Becker, Finn, present.
Eklund, present. Eklund, Rob.
Eklund, present.
Eklund, present. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, present.
Fisher, present. Green, Steve.
Green, present.
Igo, Spencer.
Present.
Igo, present. Jordan, Sydney. Jordan, Sydney. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, present.
Keeler, present. Lee, Fu.
Lee, present.
Lee, present. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, present.
Lippert, present. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, present.
Lewick, present. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, present.
Morrison, present. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Tice, Tama.
Tice, present.
Tice, present. Jordan, Sydney. Jordan, Sydney, and that'll conclude the roll.
A quorum is present. The next item on the agenda is the minutes for Thursday, January 21st, 2021. Representative Tice, have you looked at the minutes?
I have.
Would you like to move them? Would you like to move them?
I would like to move them. Absolutely.
Representative Tice moves the minutes for January 21, 2021. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? Minutes are approved. Members, we have one bill on the committee docket today, and then we'll have an update from the Minnesota Zoo. House File 2019 by Representative Eklund is another one of the kind of the leftover on the plate bills from last year. Provisions had passed in the previous session, and it was introduced during several of the special sessions. Now is here before us again. Representative Eklund, will you move that House File 219 be recommended to be placed on the General Register?
That's my motion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eklund, you also have an author's amendment. Representative Eklund, will you move the A1 amendment and explain your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendment, and this amendment will open the firearm deer season up to all legal firearms throughout the entire state of Minnesota. Does not take away the shotgun zone only. It takes away the shotgun only zone, but it doesn't mean that shotguns can't be used in the traditional areas. That's the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Members, are there any questions for Representative Eklund? I don't see any hands. Hold on just a second. Representative Heinzman.
Looks like Representative Lewitt might have the same question I do, but there's a number of provisions in this bill that are typically provisions that would be discussed in the Ag Committee. Is there a reason this is going to the General Register as opposed to giving the folks in Ag an opportunity to look at it? Am I missing something?
Representative Heinzman, if you remember back to the precedent was set last May, when these provisions were part of the overall, and the same question was asked, and then Chair Poppy said that she did not need to see them, these provisions, and then so that precedent was established, and Representative Sundin has the same opinion. So these following precedent, and it would be within our, and the reason part of that precedent is there is in the 2019 session, this committee assume some of the budget responsibilities for the Board of Animal Health. We are on the actual amendment, which relates only to the shotgun zone. So if they have questions about the amendment, we would like to get the amendment on and then can go to these larger questions.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for not being quick enough, but with this format, I'm trying to get my hand on the raise hand feature as it was being referred to the floor was a little bit cumbersome, so I'm doing the best I can to keep up considering the difficulties we have using Zoom. I'd like to respond to some of the comments you made, but if you'd like me to wait, that's fine.
If we could get the amendment on so that it's in the shape that the author would like, and I think the amendment probably does not deal with the issues that you're going to be raising, if I'm assuming correctly.
Okay, I would defer then a few moments there, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
And Representative Lewick, are you on the same page with Representative Heintzman, or did you have a question about the actual
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm assuming this is an authored amendment, so the quicker we get that on there, then we can go to the guts of the bill.
Okay. And Representative Eklund, if you could bring us back to the amendment and what it does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The basically what the amendment does is allows any legal firearm to be used anywhere in the state in the taking of white-tailed deer.
Are there any other questions on the amendment? On the amendment. The clerk will take the roll.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick, aye.
Hanson, aye. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, aye.
Heintzman, Josh.
Aye.
Heintzman, aye. Akam, Patty.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Eklund, Susan.
Eklund, aye.
Eklund, aye. Becker, Jeff.
Becker, aye.
Becker, aye. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Aye.
Becker, Finn, aye. Eklund, Rob.
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
Aye.
Green, aye. I go, Spencer.
Aye.
I go, aye. Jordan, Sydney.
Aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Me, aye. Lippert, Tom.
Aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, aye.
Lewick, aye. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Tice, Tama.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. 19 ayes and 0 nays.
The amendment is adopted. To the bill, Representative Eklund, and then I believe we have Representative Heintzman. Do you want to go first and then Representative Lewick?
I just want to make a couple of brief comments, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for just want to put on the record the suggestion that the previous legislature has bound this legislature to a process. I think I disagree with, and I want to discuss that just for a moment. Chair Poppe was referenced. Chair Poppe is not in the same committee as chair as previously has been the case. And of course, there's a number of issues that new members of the committee could very easily need to be brought up to speed on. And I would certainly encourage the majority to consider bringing that bill back to the Ag Committee again with the changes and then also with the new members and, of course, members no longer here that were mentioned as setting precedent. So that would just be a comment I think needs to be brought up. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just echo Representative Heintzman's comments. This isn't about precedents. This is about shutting out the Agriculture Committee on an area that's Chapter 35, which is very specifically under their direction. So let's not be beating around the bush on precedents. I realize that the chair has immense prerogative to keep stuff from other chairs, but I would hope that we would play on a much more collegiate approach here. So I guess the first area and relative to tagging livestock, domestic livestock. We've got a couple of standards that are mandatory that both the USDA and the Board of Animal Health require, and that is very specific tagging requirements that meet both national and international standards. They are mandatory right now, and if you look at them, it says, oh, unlawful to remove the tag. There's information on there. There's not room to start adding data that if you move the animal, sell it, it's immediately outdated. This is an example of where the Environmental Natural Resources Committee is playing in way over their head. Animal identification is there for just these kind of issues relative to disease control in all aspects. I guess, and I know the bill author is aware that there are these national, international standards that are mandatory. We're already bound to identify those animals with those types of nationally recognized requirements. So I guess, why are we trying to put another tag in an animal's ear? Because you don't get to modify these USDA approved tags. You're not allowed to do that. You got to put that in. In some cases, you can't even put it in. A veterinarian has the only one that's allowed to put them in. So I guess, why are we trying to do something that's already covered both at the state and federal level?
Representative Eklund, and maybe Representative Eklund, if you could take a moment to actually walk through the bill and then answer Representative Lewick's question. Representative Eklund.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and interesting start to the committee process here. Make sure I'm unmuted. Yes, I am. Okay. So I'll just do a basic run through, Mr. Chair. Section 1 deals with owners' accountability for escapes per day, and that's they have to report an escape within 24 hours. And if a hunter legally harvests a white-tailed deer during the legal season, they are allowed to keep it, but the deer needs to be tested for CWD if it ends up being a tagged escape survey. Section 2 deals with identification and type of tags required to identify a farm survey. We need to be able to have an accountability on how, if a hunter legally harvests an escaped deer, they need to be able to find out where it came from. So we're just trying to make a little bit more clarification on what the tag means. Section 3 defines what it means to unload for black powder muzzle loading firearms. This is getting to be more and more popular, and we felt that licensing or the regs need to be tightened up a little bit on that one, so it was clear. Section 4 defines the use of portable stands for hunting and wildlife management areas. It allows the stands to be left overnight during specific dates as it relates to the hunting seasons. On this one, I forwarded to the committee administrator. I think we need to look at down the road removing any potential liability for a person that places a stand and somebody else crawls in it, because once it's in a wildlife management area, it is open to everybody. That suggestion came too late to develop an amendment, so I think that's something that if this bill in fact does go to the general register, we might have to take a look at and have conversation about. Section 5 prohibits the importation of survey carcasses into the state of Minnesota. Currently, if you hunt out west or anywhere else and take a white-tail elk, mule deer, you cannot import the whole carcass into the state. Right now, if you go to a hunting preserve where the animals are, I like to call it a canned hunt, if you want to call it that, whatever it is, those are exempt, so you can bring that carcass back into the state. So we're just trying to tighten up that legislation where you can't bring a wild carcass in. You shouldn't be allowed to bring one from a preserve in as well. Section 6 deals with permissible firearms and ammunition for taking big game and wolves during the legal seasons in the state of Minnesota. And Mr. Chair and members, that is a basic breakdown of House File 219. And I know there are several testifiers that are ready to speak on merits of the bill.
Maybe Representative Eklund, if you could respond to Representative Lewick's question about the ear tagging provision. And members, I see we have five so far questions. So what I'd like to do is get some of the actual testifiers into the queue that might be able to answer some questions. Those include the Department of Natural Resources. So I'd like to have Representative Eklund, if you could respond to Representative Lewick's question, and then let's see if we can get some of the testifiers in, and then we'll go back to the queue of questions. Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lewick, I think I addressed it, but we just want to try to tighten up the tagging process so that there are ways for a person, if they accidentally harvest a farm survey, that they will know exactly where it came from and be able to have the contact information for the owner of the farm or operator of the farm that it came from.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Eklund. Understand one of the flaws with that approach is that USDA tag that's required when an owner transfers that animal, that transaction is recorded. That's available to Board of Animal Health. So if you start sticking tags with addresses in there and that animal moves, now you've created real confusion because, so that's the whole reason why there's a very rigid animal identification process in place for domestic livestock so that you can immediately figure out where that animal is supposed to, where it came from, because you go back and look, and if there were any movement transactions there, you're going to get the real owner, not somebody that may have birthed the animal and it's moved on. The second part of that is this business of sticking tags in animals' ears. There's a limit to how many ears they've got. Typically, the way it works is the veterinarian will tell you, you stay away from, and they each got their own preference, left or right ear with any of your own personal tags, because that's where the USDA approved tags need to go. So again, this is a fundamental reason here. We're playing in the wrong football field on this one. This needs to go to Ag Committee without question. And at this point, I would certainly move to re-refer this, or at least put that on the table, Mr. Chair, that this truly needs to be vetted in that arena, because this tagging business is critical, that we tag these animals, as we all understand. But we know how to do this, and adding additional tags is not going to do anything other than likely create confusion, particularly if this animal has ever moved to another owner, because that tag is immediately outdated, and now you've intentionally put confusion in the system because of something the Environmental Natural Resources Committee is dealing with, that you're out of school here. No other way to describe it. The other thing that I want to make sure that we get to, and I'm assuming the DNR is here, as to their situation on encouraging hunters to go out and look for tagged deer. That's a whole nother area, and where the DNR is on this, because it's my understanding that the only time that a licensed deer hunter would be able to take deer, and I'm talking about lines 2.1 to 2.5, that apparently have a tag in their ear, is during deer hunt season, or is this going to turn into the Wild West where anybody that had a deer hunt license during the calendar year can start running down and shooting tagged animals.
Ms., maybe if we can have nonpartisan staff answer that particular question. Representative Lewick, I think I heard a motion to re-refer. I'm going to ask if I could defer that until we get one of the, at least some of the eight testifiers to go through and testify. Is that okay for you, with you?
Certainly, yeah, Mr. Chair. I make that motion, but whatever you believe is appropriate to deal with that.
Okay. Nonpartisan research.
Mr. Chair, Representative Luke, if you could repeat the question, I didn't quite catch.
In lines 2.1 through 2.5, we talk about a licensed hunter under Chapter 97A may kill and possess an escaped servidae in a lawful manner and is not liable to the owner. My question is, under 97A, even if you got a license, you don't get to hunt outside of the license time frame. And there's restrictions on, you got a bow license. Yeah, in other words, is this basically saying in deer season you can shoot these animals and or is this year round anytime you bought a deer hunt license?
Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Luick, it would be a licensed hunter, so you'd be would be required to be hunting under a license, which would only be valid during the deer season or, you know, whatever you're hunting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's very helpful. So that, again, calls into question why we would be narrowing this down to a few days in some cases and at most a couple weeks in other parts of the state. I'm afraid this kind of situation in statute is going to could possibly bring out the worst in some of our citizens, and they would you know, possibly break the law and damage a fence and then, oh my goodness, there's a deer out here and shoot it. And according to this, they'd be, as long as they didn't get caught damaging the fence, they'd be perfectly legal to have done that. I guess a follow-up question on that, what is the DNR's position on that particular element of this bill? Does the DNR support this approach?
Representative Lewick, the DNR is third out of, I think, eight people who are testifying. So if they could take that question in their order, I think that Ms. Commissioner Meyer has heard that and he will answer it when he gets to that. I would like to move to the public testimony if we could. So I think Commissioner Meyer has heard that question. Mr. Cook, Steve Cook. And if you could address, state your name and who you are for the record.
This is Steve Cook, West St. Paul, Minnesota.
Welcome, Mr. Cook.
I don't know quite how to get my image up there.
If we are unable to, I think maybe just proceed with your verbal testimony.
Right here.
Yeah,
maybe. Okay, I guess I'm there now. I guess I am discussing as briefly as I can my how I've been affected by CWD. I've been hunting deer in Minnesota and Wisconsin for the last 42 years, and I've often hunted in both states. And I first ran into CWD when I hunted down by Viola, Wisconsin, which is about 80 miles west and a little north of Madison. And a friend of the family and of mine had land down there, 90 acres of forested cropland that I hunted on. And I first became aware, I believe, Wisconsin first became aware of CWD in 2002. And I still hunted down there for another 4 or 5 years as I watched the prevalence of the infection grow. Became so concerned about this area because it eventually became the hotbed of Wisconsin's CWD. In fact, now in the Madison area, there's your chances of having CWD in a harvested deer are almost 1 in 3. So I eventually then moved to northern Wisconsin. My wife's family has a farm, old farmstead there, and there's some of the family still owns portions of the old farmstead, and I would hunt on that property. And then thinking that it would be take decades, literally decades, for the CWD to move the 180 miles from Viola to Rice Lake. Well, it only took about 10 years because in 2012, Barron County, where Rice Lake is, had CWD show up. And as the incidence of the of CWD has grown in that area, and the fact that it continues to grow, I decided about 4 years ago to quit hunting Wisconsin. So now I hunt northern Minnesota. I've had land up there for over 20 years, and we've hunted on that land. And I'm concerned now because it's being discovered as far north as Crow Wing County, and maybe some in Aiken, but I'm not sure about Aiken County. And so the other thing that has me concerned is the fact that it's hard to find a place where you can have the deer processed now. In fact, processors are discontinuing handling deer unless the deer have been skinned and boned. And if you're going to skin and bone a deer, if you've got the facilities or the area to skin and bone a deer, then you might as well finish the process yourself. So that's the impact has been quite fast and quite intensive.
Any questions for Mr. Cook? I guess we've got the hands up from before. I guess we'll maybe take questions at the end of Mr. Cook, if you could stay on.
Sure.
Thank you. Mr. Quillis.
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
Yes, and we can see you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Tony Quillis. I have the honor and pleasure of representing the Minnesota Elk Breeders Association. I will be brief in my comments. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today and to Representative Eklund for his willingness to discuss my concerns over the last couple of days with this bill. Mr. Chairman, just wanted to alert you to the Board of Animal Health is currently undergoing a process to update their rules in regards to farm survey. And I just, as I comment, I'll probably touch on where these parallel with House File 219. And in Section 1, Mr. Chairman, specifically on line 1.12, in the Board of Animal Health rules that they're updating, they are adding themselves also to folks that must be notified when there is a farm survey escape within 24 hours. They are the regulatory oversight of the farm survey industry, and it's completely understandable, but I wanted to point out to the committee that the Board of Animal Health is also in their rules adding them because they're the regulatory agency of the farm survey to the running at large prohibited statute. Mr. Chairman, on page 2, you've already touched on 2.1 to 2.6 and a couple of things there. The language says a hunter licensed by the commissioner may kill and possess an escape farm survey in a lawful manner. In regards to elk, the only zone that you can lawfully shoot an elk is up in Kitson County, up on the Canadian border. It used to be, Grigola used to be in there too, but that's out because there's not enough animals in there for the elk management plan. So they've kind of taken that out. But that season runs from, I think, August 13th to December 31st. So by the letter of the law, the only way if a hunter shot an elk in Wilmer, he wouldn't legally in a lawful manner be taking that, because the only place you can lawfully take an elk is up in northern Minnesota. So I just wanted to point that out, Mr. Chairman, number one. Number two, the other key word there on 2.2 is kill and possess. So, Mr. Chairman, in terms of other livestock, whether it be hogs or turkey, or if a cattle got out or cows, they are usually returned to the rightful owner. Some of the elk that my members have are worth hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. They put a lot of time commitment and financial commitment into it. So they would like the animal back, one. Two, it leads into 2.4 and 2.5, Mr. Chairman, where it must be tested for chronic wasting disease. As an owner, if it got out, the only way you can test it is right now is if it's deceased. I can't test it for CWD if the hunter possesses it. I need to get it back from him so I can test it. More than likely, our folks are going to use what's known as the ICH test. It's kind of known as the gold standard, so that we can find out if that animal was positive, you know, there's an issue there. But I need that animal to be able to test it. And if the hunter possesses it, I can't do that, Mr. Chairman. So just wanted to be able to and point that out that, you know, we need to test it in a prescribed manner by the Board of Animal Health. And also in the Board of Animal Health rules that I mentioned earlier, they are also talking about that the harvested or deer must be tested regardless of age for CWD. So, Mr. Chairman, again, thank you for allowing me to express those concerns. Thank you to Representative Eklund for his willingness to discuss my concerns. And, Mr. Chairman, I'll stick around for any questions, but wanted to make sure that Mr. Meyer gets in there because I'm sure there'll be a number of questions for him.
Thank you, Mr. Quillis, and you'll stick around. So, Commissioner Meyer, Minnesota DNR.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. And given the length of your testimony list, I'm going to keep my testimony brief, and I do have Colonel Rodman Smith here with me that can help me answer any questions on the specifics. First of all, we would like to say thank you to Representative Eklund and yourself and your committee in taking the leadership role on the important issue of chronic wasting disease and continuing to try to get these provisions placed into law. We do support anything that can be done to help encourage people to deal with and to mitigate or reduce escapes, and feel that the language in the beginning of this law in section one that we were just discussing will provide an incentive for producers, A, not to have their animals escape, and then B, which they already have, obviously, but when they do escape, provide them an incentive to get them back as soon as possible. We understand the concerns about identification and tagging, and we have discussed about that, those issues previously in your committee, and whatever we can do to improve that would be greatly appreciated. And finally, the technical corrections to the definitions of muzzle loaders, as Representative Eklund said, really support keeping technology in pace and statutes in pace with technology, as some advances in the muzzle loader equipment needs an updating of this section of statutes. And as we've talked about previously, we do support allowing public stands in these larger units of the wildlife management area system that are identified in this bill. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for questions.
Commissioner Meyer, you had heard Representative Lewick's question earlier.
Yes, I think he was wondering if we supported that language, and we do support that, as I said in my testimony.
Okay. I want to keep, we will come back to you, but I want to move because we have a long list of testifiers. So if you could stay on deck. Greg Cavall, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers.
Am I on now?
Yes, welcome.
Good, thank you. Yeah, and thanks for the opportunity to testify. I represent backcountry hunters and anglers. We're at our core, we're public land organizations, support all uses on public land, or at least responsible uses. And I'd like to just express our support for Section 1 of the bill as written. We think that has some fairly significant language in it that protects hunters from liability if they do happen to take a farm survey and may not even be aware of it. Section 3, I'm not going to comment on Section 2. I think that is kind of out our purvey, I should say. Section 3, we do support simplifying and updating the laws related to muzzleloaders. And on Section 4, the portable stands, I'll offer a personal statement here on that. I actually have hunting land in the northwest part of the state. I have placed two stands on larger WMAs in the northwestern part of the state several years ago and have experienced absolutely no conflicts with those stands. I did run into somebody that had chosen to use one of my stands, and we had no incident with it. These are very low density use areas, and it just makes sense to allow some access to those areas. Also support the unifying of the law, basically, on the transportation of carcasses, survey carcasses inside and outside the state. Just makes sense that everybody should have to play by the same set of rules. Thank you very much for the opportunity, and that's all I have for testimony.
And if you could just state your name and location for the record.
Sure. My name's Greg Qualley, and I'm from Baxter, Minnesota.
Thank you. You're Mr. welcome. Spreck, Minnesota Deer Farmers Association.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Tim Spreck, and I'm here speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Deer Farmers. I'm going to try not to replow too much ground, but this is pretty important to my people, so I want to make sure that we're making our points very specifically, and I'll start with lines 2.1 to 2.3, licensed hunters may kill and possess escape farm survey. Mr. Chair, under this section, we have several concerns. Number one would be this does not take into account any type of activity that could happen outside of the farmer's control that would allow these deer to escape. So we're talking about vandalism. We have a number of documented cases where vandalism allowed farm survey to escape. We've got concern about trees falling on the fences. We've also got storm damage. And these are all real concerns that my people have to deal with on a daily basis. Mr. Chair, we also have concern that this would be considered a constitutional property rights violation. It would be a taking by a non-government entity of a private property without compensation. This type of activity does not apply to any other form of livestock, and make no mistake about it, be very specifically informed that farmed whitetail cervidae and all farmed cervidae are livestock. It would be ludicrous for us to sit here today and debate whether or not a licensed hunter had the ability, the legal ability, and the right to shoot and possess a farmed cow, sheep, goat, turkey. We have to think about these as livestock, and the idea that we should be allowing people to take these animals and possess them is actually somewhat laughable on its face. The other thing that we're very concerned about is that in a situation, if this were to pass through an act of vandalism, an individual could remove a lock, cut a hole in the fence, usher a very valuable trophy buck out and legally shoot it. The only legal ramifications they potentially could face would be a misdemeanor damage to property. They could legally take and possess that whitetail with no compensation for the owner. Mr. Chair, on lines 2.4 and 2.5, the hunter killed deer must be tested for CWD. Currently, all farmed whitetail, all farmed cervidae that die for any reason at all must be tested by law. So what this does is it kind of reinvents the wheel. The reason we oppose this section is simply because it presupposes that that animal is killed by a licensed hunter, not the fact that it needs to be tested. We do oppose the hunter harvest piece of this bill. Mr. Chair, on section or on lines 2.11 to 2.14 under identification and tagging, this is kind of a solution in search of a problem. Currently, as Representative Lewick explained in depth, all farm survey have to have tags that identify them. We don't need to add additional tags. This causes unnecessary hardship and burden upon the farmer because it causes unnecessary handling and potential for injury and doesn't need to be done. We can get to the same place just by a quick call to the Board of Animal Health, referencing the numbers on the tag, and we can immediately learn the identity and the location of the owner. Mr. Chair, we're very concerned about these provisions in this bill, as I've outlined. It seems specifically prejudicial against deer farmers and cervidae farmers in general. And the understanding that these are livestock really means that it needs to be purveyed as a livestock entity rather than some of the provisions that are within this bill. So today I'll conclude my comments, but we do have a letter that we provided that outlines some of our concerns specifically. And if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Sprechen. The letter is posted, and we've received other letters that are being posted as well. And letters that arrived after the deadline will be posted to the committee website. Next up is Craig Engwall, Minnesota Deer Hunters Association.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. Craig Engwall, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. The easy answer in my testimony is we support the entire bill, including the author's amendment, but I will hit on a couple key points. With respect to sections 1 and 2 about running at large and identification, it's fine by law, captive cervids are defined as livestock, but the fact of the matter is a captive deer looks like a white-tailed deer, and many of us hunt in heavy brush. I don't think I've shot a deer more than 50 yards away for many years, so it's not like a Guernsey running through the woods. It's a deer, and it's hard for a hunter in certain instances to make that identification or even see a tag. And in fact, we've had Tony Kennedy have articles in the Star Tribune about deer that have been shot down in the Southeast with ear tags in them. So it does happen. It would not be fair at all to impose any liability on the deer hunter. And so therefore we support those provisions. We support the provisions about muzzleloaders to bring statutes up to the current technology. With respect to stands, this has been a longstanding position of MDHA, and we have chapters in the Northwest, and these large WMAs with tens of thousands of acres are more tantamount to forest land, so stands overnight are okay. In our mind, we do have concerns about preemption of hunting places, and as Mr. Qualley said, we view those stands as being available to somebody if they're up and somebody's using them. In terms of the importation of cervidae carcasses, we feel they should be treated the same as hunter harvested and deer from other states. And with respect to the author's amendment, last year we passed a resolution in February supporting this. We had DNR conservation officers speak to our members and assured us it was not a safety issue. And in light of that, and in light of the fact that Wisconsin and other states have made these changes in the last several years or more, and have not seen an uptick in accidents, we think it's perfectly appropriate. And with that, I would be happy to take questions later.
Amy Cordry, citizen, if you could state your name for the record and place.
Hello to the House Environment, Natural Resources, Finance and Policy Committee. I am Amy Cordry. I am a citizen, and I'm also the at-large member of the public on the Minnesota Board of Animal Health Farm Cervid Advisory Committee, which has been a most informative and interesting experience. So I am hearing quite a bit of what the discussion has been, and I'm very familiar with the references to those drafts, of which I believe there have probably been at least 8. All right. I'm here to testify to the benefits of the amendments that you are presenting today. Section 1, running at large, prohibited D, the hunter licensed by the commissioner may kill and possess a cervid. I believe that that is a good amendment. My personal experience here in southeastern Minnesota, which you all know the situation with, reinforces the wisdom of removing escaped farm cervidae as soon as possible from the environment. There have been farm cervidae that have been escaped for weeks that we know of. So I think we can see the problem. Here where I live, a adjacent deer farm was found to have inadequate fencing. Not a tree, just inadequate. And an escaped cervid was shot by an out-of-state hunter and removed to Illinois. That source deer farm it came from was much later found to be totally infected with CWD and decommissioned. There was a situation that could have been caught earlier. So I think we see where that goes. Farm cervidae running at large prevent an immediate and serious threat to wild deer and the spread of CWD prions. The effective date of September 21st for that certainly allows more than enough time for deer farmers to address their fencing. If those deer are worth hundreds or elk, are worth hundreds or thousands of dollars, then fencing should certainly be a priority. I know for our cattle, horses, whatever we have on our farm, fencing is an incredible priority. And I think that is an excellent amendment. I'm more than familiar with fencing, and I would just point out that good fences make good neighbors. And in this case, it's never been more true since the entire state of Minnesota is the neighbor for this situation. For E, the escaped farm cervidae killed by a hunter or destroyed by the commissioner must be tested. Every cervid that can be tested should be tested for CWD. Hunter harvested deer generally focus on a specific population, older bucks, and we know why. That's fine. So in order to test a broader demographic, it will be crucial to utilize every opportunity to test. So I think that's an excellent amendment, especially if it's been out in the wild, contacting or perhaps spreading to other cervids. Section 2, identification. I understand the concerns. I've been a livestock owner. I've lost tags out of my cattle's ears, so I really see that situation. But I can only again refer to the situation here in southeastern Minnesota, where perhaps if that information had been on that deer that came from that deer farm that was decommissioned later, there would have been a more rapid response. And perhaps things could have been different, all right? If it's found dead and shot, tested positive, that will enable efforts to locate other exposed animals. So that's an extremely important point, is to test those animals. Testing every animal possible is a best management practice. Section 5, concerning carcasses, it's excellent that is no longer hunter harvested. That way we've captured those hunt facilities, as I think I've heard here earlier. And that's an accepted alternative to not allowing any carcasses from CWD infected states or areas. And I think that's probably a rather risky compromise. As we've seen with COVID, not every public citizen is responsible, but maybe we'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Okay. And so that is an alternative best management practice from the Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies, known as AFWA. So chronic wasting disease is insidious in that it can wait a long time to show itself. In the meantime, shedding prions and contaminating the environment, other servants, as well as human health. All right. So I will take any questions or clarifications that people would like to refer to later. And I thank the committee very, very much.
Thank you. Rob Doerr, Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus.
Hello, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am here on behalf of the, my name is Rob Doerr. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. And I'm always thrilled when I am able to talk about something that Representative Becker Finn and I agree on. I sat next to her and testified in favor of her muzzleloader bill when it was up last session. And I was disappointed to see that that didn't get over the finish line. But this actually incorporates a really great piece of technology that was developed at Federal right here in Minnesota and makes it legal for Minnesotans to use. So that's sections 3 and 6, and I support those sections as well as the amendment, the author's amendment. It's something that I've actually personally been working on for quite a long time here in Minnesota. Is the fixing of the zones. None of our neighbors, most of the Great Plains states, don't limit the use of rifles, and this is something that's actually actively being kind of circumvented right now. As it is in Minnesota, you can build rifle caliber firearms into pistol form factors and be able to use rifle calibers inside the pistol zone because the firearm actually meets the definition of a pistol. And that has caused some confusion among the DNR conservation officers. We've got many of our members which have been kind of, I won't say harassed, but they've been questioned and detained and actually in some instances had their firearms seized because of the confusion and the nuances of the law. So it would help clarify that, bring us consistent with other states. But also it doesn't make sense that a landowner down in Marshall, Minnesota can target shoot with long guns all year round on his property. But then if he wants to deer hunt on there, now he can't use that very same rifle that he's an expert marksman with all year long. We trust our hunters to be able to identify when it's appropriate to take a shot, to know their target and what's behind it that's hammered into them throughout their lives, and firmly support the adoption of this. And if not in this bill, at least hopefully we can gather some support for the measure as a standalone bill. And I'll stick around if there's any questions after the fact. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Doerr. Your video turned a strange shade of green somewhere in the middle, so I don't.
Oh,
so let right. you know.
Okay.
Now it's gone.
All right. Interesting. Thank you.
So, members, we have. I still want to make sure that people realize we have the Minnesota Zoo on deck. I want to go back and go through the hands that were raised prior to the testimony, and if any of those members have something as well for the testifiers, but. I want to go back to Representative Lewick and take your motion now, if that's okay, Representative Lewick.
Mr. Chair, I would have one question for the DNR first, if that's possible.
Sure.
This for the DNR and probably Colonel Rodman Smith. How many actual recorded incidents of a deer hunter intentionally or accidentally killing a domestic cervidae that's been tagged, do we have on record? In other words, how many times has that happened in our history? And I'm talking about, you really got a contact report, and this is really something that we've got in the record, not speculation.
Commissioner Meyer or Colonel Smith?
Mr. Chair, members, Colonel Rodman Smith, Director of Enforcement, Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Chair, Representative Lulick, we do have a few every couple of years. It's not a common occurrence. I don't even know if we have the ability to track that with our records management system that we have, or if we have tracked that. But anecdotally, I could say very confidently that, you know, maybe one and sometimes maybe two or three a year, and there might be ones that are not reported to us. So it's not a common occurrence, but it does happen.
Representative Lewick.
Mr. Chair, a quick follow-up. Has there been any legal consequence for that? Obviously, in other words, are you aware of any charges that were filed against that hunter that probably did it accidentally?
Mr. Chair,
Colonel Smith.
Representative Lewick, no criminal charges from the DNR. I had heard anecdotally that there may have been some civil issues between the producer and the person that harvested a deer, I believe it was in northern Minnesota, if I'm correct, but no criminal charges, but there could have been some type of civil action.
Thanks. Members, I would encourage you, when you have some spare time, you could Google your tag Deer Star Tribune. I think you'll have two stories, one where Colonel Smith, there was a deer that had an ear tag that said, "Miss Me," written on it, and then there's also one that had a tag for, and there was some dispute over ownership. That was a very large rack on that one. Representative Lewick, do you want to do your motion?
Yes, I would. I'd like to re-refer this bill to the Ag Committee, particularly to look at that section that deals with ear tags in particular, and I would certainly like a recorded vote on that.
Representative Lewick asked to refer to the Ag Committee and asked for a roll call vote. Representative Eklund, to the motion to re-refer.
Speaking against the motion, Mr. Chair, I think we went through this last year, but I'll leave it up to the committee.
Clerk will take the roll.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick, no.
Hanson, no. Wozlowick, Amy.
Wozlowick, no.
Wozlowick, no. Heintzman, Josh.
Heintzman, yes.
Heintzman, aye. Acom, Patty.
Acom, no.
Acom, no. Eklund, Susan.
Eklund, yes.
Eklund, yes. Backer, Jeff.
Yes. Backer, yes.
Backer, yes. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
No.
Becker, Finn, no. Eklund, Rob.
No.
Eklund, no. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, no.
Fisher, no. Green, Steve.
Green, yes.
Green, yes. I go, Spencer.
I go, yes.
I go, yes. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, no.
Jordan, no. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, no.
Keeler, no. Lee, Fu.
Lee, no.
Lee, no. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, no.
Lippert, no. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, yes.
Lewick, yes. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, no.
Morrison, no. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, yes. Tice, Tama.
Tice, yes.
Tice, yes. It is 8 ayes and 11 noes.
The motion does not prevail. Representative Lewick, did you have a question for any of the testifiers? Because I've got 5 more on the dock here. So.
No, I appreciate your indulgence on that motion. That's the best we can do is leave it up to the committee.
Representative, I thought Representative Backer was on there, but his hand seems to have disappeared. So Representative Green?
Oh, yeah, Representative Chair, yeah, I did have my hand, but that pertained to the motion. I was obviously in favor of it, and the committee made a decision, so I did remove my hand because I do think it should have went to the Ag Committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I didn't want to lose you there. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a few concerns I have on the bill. The one is that now it's not going to Ag Committee. We're actually changing law that deals with the Board of Animal Health. I don't know how that's going to go over. So I'll first of all ask the author of the bill if there's a Senate companion.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Green, I'm talking to Senator Ingebrigtsen about introducing the bill. It has not been introduced yet. If he doesn't introduce it, I do have another senator that's ready to introduce it.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, it's really too bad because there's a lot of good provisions in this bill. I think that if we were to remove sections 1 and 2, we could pass the rest of the bill and get that through and then have the discussions on the other. And I'm not going to belabor this too much because it's been talked about and it probably will be again before we're done here. But the issue of being able to take someone's property, we're actually now changing the law to make it legal to confiscate someone else's private property. That should be very concerning to all of us. I mean, take the surveys out of it for a minute and ask yourself what you're really doing there in the way of precedent as far as sitting here in a committee and telling someone who owns livestock, whether it's deer, whether it's a cow, whether it's a horse, you name it, the legislature can come in now and say, you no longer have a right to that property. We found it, it's ours now, and you don't even get compensated for it. And so I think that in itself should give us some concerns. The other parts of the bill, like I said, I think it's important that we pass them, but with this provision in it, I don't even, it might move out of this committee, but I think you might see some legal challenges if it even should become law. I think you have a tough time getting it through the Senate. When if we were to pull these sections 1 and 2 out, these other ones could be passed through, I'm sure, both bodies and be signed in very short order.
Representative Eklund.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think thank you for your comments, Representative Green. I think it's very clear when we say legally harvested, and there's been several references to livestock here, and I agree, farm survey are livestock, but you cannot tell the difference between a farm survey and a wild survey once they are outside the fence. And I think that is the big difference. We don't have any legal seasons for cattle or that sort of thing. So I think that's why we're very specific when it says a hunter licensed by the Commissioner of Natural Resources on line 2.1. And then 2.4 and 2.5 saying that if a tagged survey is shot during the legal season, it must be tested. So I would disagree with you, Senator Representative Green, because I just gave you a promotion, I think. But anyway, I appreciate your comments.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You left out one important part of the in that comment on that response. And that is that even after they shoot the deer, let's say it was a mistake and they couldn't see the tag. All right, I'll buy that. Maybe in many cases. However, this bill gives them a right to keep it without compensation, and it's not their property. If someone, and this has happened, it's happened in my area where you have a young hunter has gone out and actually shot a cow and went up and put his tag on it. That's how excited he was. And so according to this, if that happens, then he could have kept the cow. And I realize that's a stretch, but that's what you're saying here. You're not only are they destroying the property, but they're getting to keep it after they've done that. And then to add insult to injury, the owner of that property has to pay to have it tested before they give it away. So there's some problems with the bill. And I would hopefully, if this does come to the floor, I'll probably have some amendments to it on the floor. I do recommend that that you would make some changes to the bill, maybe talk to some senators and see if you can't work something out, get the good provisions passed. Thank you.
Representative Becker Finn, and then Representative Heintzman, and then Representative Jordan, and then Representative Wazlawick. Representative Becker Finn.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to clarify a couple things for the record. I was getting some text messages from different people who are watching or, not as familiar with deer hunting and these issues. And so I want to clarify what we're talking about. We're talking about farmed survey. So it's not necessarily if you're thinking like the books your kids have about Old MacDonald and they just happen to have a deer among their with the horse and the cow and the chicken. You know, a lot of these facilities might more accurately be described as a kind of breeding operations that are designed for a penned shooting situation, kind of like what Representative Eklund described as a canned hunt. I don't like to use the word hunt. If you don't need a hunting license to do it, then I don't think we should call it that. You know, one of the testifiers even referenced a very valuable trophy buck getting out of the fence. And so I just want to make clear to folks that that's sort of those operations, those businesses do exist in our state. And that's part of the problem here is that, you know, folks can pay, you know, over $10,000 to pick out an animal and then have the right to shoot that animal within a fence. And so that's some of those businesses that we're talking about and why the value of some of these animals is considered so high. And that also gets to why how important the carcass movement restriction portion of the bill is, because right now as a hunter, I could, you know, go and do a lottery and get a license and go shoot a deer in Montana or some other state. And if I'm going to bring it back to Minnesota, there are restrictions I have to follow to make sure I'm not bringing CWD back to Minnesota. But if somebody with a lot more money than me goes down to Texas and does the same thing in a penned shooting facility, they're not under those same restrictions. And we really think at a minimum, the person going to Texas and in a penned shooting facility should be at least have at a minimum the same responsibility as a licensed hunter who's hunting wild game. So really glad that that was included in this bill. And then the other thing I want to touch on is just kind of this consternation about the deer running at large issue. You know, how many deer are they allowing to run at large? And, you know, this insinuation that deer hunters are somehow criminal or have, you know, ill intentions, I think is really problematic for me as someone who has considers himself an ethical deer hunter who's been licensed my whole life. I'm, you know, certified to help other people learn how to handle firearms so they can go deer hunting. And I just think that sort of insinuation is honestly, I want to make sure the record shows that we're not insinuating that our deer hunters in Minnesota are somehow criminally minded, because it's really important that we have more people deer hunting to help control the herd. And to what Representative Eklund said too about the bill says in a lawful manner. So if they're cutting, if somebody were to cut open a fence or do something illegal, well, then they're not doing it in a lawful manner and they wouldn't be allowed. I think I'm the only deer hunter slash attorney, maybe Mr. Doar, I can't remember who else is an attorney. But you know, I think I'm can speak to that it's a licensed person in a lawful manner. And Mr. Chair, if it's okay with you, I actually have the pictures pulled up of one of those deer that was a farmed cervid that was shot by a hunter. I'm just going to share my screen if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
That's okay, Representative Becker-Finn, please quickly.
Yep. So just to give folks an idea, that's what we're talking about. It's a wild deer. And as we said, it's really a unique situation where we've got the exact same species on both sides of the fence. So this comparing it to other livestock might be fun for your comparisons, but just isn't reality because it's the same species that we're talking about. And if you're going to be that careless with your property, you know, if you roll down the window and your $20 bill falls out the window and somebody else picks it up, you were too careless with that. That's on you. And so I think, you know, this idea that there's some kind of taking going on when folks are being careless with their property is just misplaced. So thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make sure their record reflected some of that, because I think those are really important things that were, you know, this is a deer hunter bill. This is about standing up for deer hunters and our wild deer herd. And I thank Representative Eklund for bringing this forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Representative Becker-Finn, could you cite the source for that photo?
It was, Mr. Chair, it was provided to me from a hunter in southern Minnesota. I think it was the 2019 deer season. It was lawfully taken during the archery season. And after he shot the deer, discovered that it had the tag, and the facility where it came from wanted it back, is my understanding of what happened in that scenario.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. just looking at the members and public and other folks in the attendance in this meeting, Mr. Chair, I'm wanting to confirm that the Board of Animal Health isn't here today.
That is correct. We had posted it with time and members signed up, but that they did not sign up to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of comments then that I'd like to make. I believe it was last year when this discussion was going on that the percentage of escaped animals attributed to vandalism was discussed. And if somebody can correct me if I've got this information wrong, I apologize and I'm happy to take that information. But it was a high percentage. We'll just say it was significant, the number of deer that escaped a cervid farm or elk farm. In many, many cases, was due to vandalism. No fault of the farmers, and it just begs a question as to how we're handling this issue. To, on one hand, open up that opportunity wide to anybody that possesses a firearms license to shoot and possess one of these animals, when you consider how many of those cases are as a direct result to either vandalism, and then the other large category is a storm of some kind. I also wanted to point out, Mr. Chair, that there are a number of very excellent provisions in this bill, and Representative Eklund should be commended. I appreciate a number of the provisions that do protect our natural resources. And I'm glad that we're having this conversation. CWD is a very dangerous disease and we do have to take it seriously. And I'm glad that this committee is doing that. We do have questions obviously about how some of these issues are handled in the wild. And I'm glad that we're talking about it. Although I wish that Representative Lewick's motion to move this so that it had a opportunity to be discussed in the Ag Committee. I wish that had been successful. We'll have to talk about a number of those things on the floor, I guess. But I think that having a broad conversation would definitely benefit the bill as a whole. I do want to also, though, clarify for those in the public that are wondering, there was that sort of, I'm gonna characterize as an accusation to some extent, that deer farmers are simply trophy salesmen. And that's just not the case. If you've ever visited with a kid, say Make-A-Wish and other organizations that organize hunts in some of these locations, which can be hundreds of acres, that kid may shoot a doe and consider it a trophy, even though it was in a hand hunt. And I think that needs to be recognized as an important part of this. Veterans groups and other organizations where individuals who otherwise either can't or would have a very diminished ability to access hunting can do it and have done it many, many hundreds of times on cervid farms. So, you know, to put the picture up and suggest that that's all that is going on these farms, I think is disingenuous. And then in addition to that, many of these locations have traditionally been involved in other areas of agriculture, and this is an income source for over 200 families around the state of Minnesota, had been significantly more. And it's got to be at least recognized how important that is. That all being said, I continue to thank Representative Eklund for the bill, and I hope that we continue to discuss some of these important issues. I will be supporting the bill in spite of the problems. I do hope that our friends on the Senate side, who, if they do choose to take up this language, I'm sure that some of these concerns will be addressed. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Jordan, and then Representative Wozlawick, and then Representative Eklund. And members, I would like to at least provide 5 minutes for the zoo at the end just to check in, because they've been waiting the whole time. So if we, that would give us 10 minutes to wrap all of this up. So Representative Jordan.
I'll keep it quick, Mr. Chair. Thank you. My question, I think, is for Commissioner Meyer. Commissioner Meyer, my question is also about Minnesota treaty rights and our obligations as a state to uphold our treaties. We know that the Supreme Court has really asserted that enrolled members retain hunting rights on ceded territory. So would failing to protect our cervidae here in Minnesota violate any of our treaty rights, or how would that intersect with our obligation, the state of Minnesota's obligations in various treaties that the state has signed?
Commissioner Meyer and members, you will be getting a letter from Fond du Lac that came in about an hour before. I don't know if you've received it yet or not, but there is a testimony that came in. Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, members, that's a great question, Representative. Given the time that we have here, DNR is not in charge of enforcing CWD. We don't have any authority over these farms. So I would really refer to the Board of Animal Health on that question.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I look forward to reading the letter from the Fond du Lac Nation. Thank you.
Representative Wozlawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a couple of questions for Mr. Spreck, if he would be willing to.
Mr. Spreck still on? Representative Wozlawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Spreck, I just had a couple of sort of follow-up inquiries to your testimony that I wanted to run by you. Can you tell me what the process would be if the Board of Animal Health wasn't open and I found a deer that was from a deer farm? What would my recourse be at that point?
Mr. Spreck.
I'm sorry, Representative, if you would clarify as to what the Board of Animal Health piece that was.
Yep. Representative Wozlawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I found a deer and I wanted to know who it belonged to, and the Board of Animal Health wasn't open, let's say it was a Saturday or an evening and I found a deer, what would my recourse be if I couldn't call the Board of Animal Health and find out who that deer belonged to?
Mr. Spreck.
I'm sorry, but I don't have a great answer for that. I know that the USDA has the information, Board of Animal Health does, but as to whether or not they answer phones on weekends or off hours, I honestly don't know. I've never tried to call them.
Representative Wozlawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm also wondering, you had mentioned cows and turkeys in your testimony, and I'm wondering if you can tell me if there are any diseases that cows or turkeys carry that could be transmitted to wild animals if they were to escape.
I think it...
Representative Spreck. Mr. Spreck.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, we had a little delay. I do know that there are turkey-related diseases that and bird-related diseases that can go back and forth between wild and farmed. Not familiar with anything that would transmit from cow, but it's not my area of expertise either. And I think it's more important to understand that rather than analyzing that statement, it's to illustrate a point. The point is that this is a livestock animal, and the idea that a licensed hunter should be able to shoot it with impunity and possess the animal, that's where the problem lies.
Representative Wozlawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the point is that this is a disease that spreads very quickly and is transmissible to wild animals, and that it's a really big issue for our state. And I think that, you know, regardless of disagreements on that specific piece of the bill, I think that we have to do more to contain CWD. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ackland.
I have a simple question. I am a non-hunter, and my question is this to anyone that wants to answer it. And that is, are all deer that are legally killed by licensed hunters required to be tested for the CWD?
Commissioner Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ackland, not all deer. Currently, we have several CWD surveillance zones for the sake of information. The southeastern corner of the state is primarily our main CWD zone. I will send you a map and a link with other zones. In those zones, we have testing opportunities. Previous years, pre-COVID, we had mandatory collection stations. This past year, we went to a voluntary model where people could drop their deer heads into a box and we would collect those and sample them. Moving into the future, once we come through the pandemic, I would believe that in these important areas, we will have mandatory testing once again.
Representative Ackland.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, just to follow up on that, I was questioning, what is the expense to have this test done? Because I see that they want to make the owner of the farm responsible for the cost of that. And if the if a legally killed deer, because these people who are killing the deer from the farm are going to possess it, it would seem to me that it would make more sense that they would bear the expense of the testing.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure what the cost of the test is. Somebody from the DNR might be able to answer that. But the reason we're doing this is if an escaped deer is CWD positive, then the rest of the farm needs to be checked out as far as whether it needs to be quarantined or depopulated is the reason for having the test done.
And Representative Ackland, we will be having the last session, there was an agreement between the House and the Senate to have quarterly updates on CWD. So you will be, if we do not have a meeting, you will be getting reports that will talk about the budget implications that the DNR, we've spent hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars on responding to CWD. And so hopefully we'll be having those hearings jointly in the future. If not, we will make sure we're getting that information out to the committee. Representative Lewick, the last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question, just a comment. For anybody out there that hunts, if by chance you kill an animal that has a tag in it, regardless of what kind of animal it is, it's a lot quicker to get a hold of the conservation officer in your area. That's the proper procedure. If that turns out to be a tag that he identifies as a domestic USDA approved tag, the system has the ability then to contact the appropriate people. But if you're out hunting and you kill something accidentally or intentionally, it turns out not to be what you thought it was, or it has a tag, really basic stuff. That's what our conservation officers will help you sort out. And if there's follow-on stuff that needs to be done, they can take care of it and give you a feeling as to the time sensitivity. And again, I want to echo my thoughts, Representative Heintzman did, on the hard work that Representative Eklund's put into this bill. And I'm not going to be able to support it reluctantly just because of a couple of areas we disagree on. But again, appreciate the hard work he's put into this.
Representative Eklund, final comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, for the lively discussion. This bill is intended to protect the health and integrity of Minnesota's wild deer herd. There is a need and a market for farm survey in the state. We also must do whatever we can to make sure that we have a thriving, healthy wild deer herd in the state of Minnesota for years to come. I ask for your support.
Clerk will take the roll on the bill, House File 219, to the General Register.
Hanson, Rick.
Hanson, Rick, aye.
Hanson, aye. Wasilewicz, Amy.
Wasilewicz, aye.
Wasilewicz, aye. Heintzman, Josh.
Heintzman, aye.
Heintzman, aye. Acomb, Patty.
Acomb, aye.
Acomb, aye. Ackland, Susan.
Ackland, no.
Ackland, no. Thacker, Jeff.
Thacker, no.
Thacker, no. Becker, Finn, Jamie.
Becker, Finn, aye.
Becker, Finn, aye. Eklund, Rob.
Eklund, aye.
Eklund, aye. Fisher, Peter.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Green, Steve.
Green, no.
Green, no. Igo, Spencer.
Igo, aye.
Igo, aye. Jordan, Sydney.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Keeler, Heather.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lee, Fu.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Lippert, Todd.
Lippert, aye.
Lippert, aye. Lewick, Dale.
Lewick, no.
Lewick, no. Morrison, Kelly.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Nelson, Nathan.
Nelson, no.
Nelson, no. Tice, Tama.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye. 14 ayes and 5 noes.
Thank you. The motion is approved and the bill is on its way to the General Register. Members, we have 5 minutes and I would like to have Mr. Frawley and Ms. Mosher from the Minnesota Zoo come forward. We will have more time for the zoo, but they have been waiting and the zoo is a very critical portion and I want to give them a few minutes of our time before we adjourn. Welcome and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for allowing me to testify on behalf of the zoo. My name is John Frawley, director of the Minnesota Zoo, and with me today I have Abigail Mosher, zoo CFO, and Missy McGrath, zoo legislative director. So I do acknowledge the time that's in front of us, so I will just jump to a couple slides, Mr. Chair, to kind of give you and the committee members a little bit of a feel for the critical position that the Minnesota Zoo is in right now. And I can come back later and do more of a bigger presentation in future date. But as you remember, the Minnesota Zoo is a very unique state agency, approximately $30 million operating budget. One third of our funding comes from the state, but two thirds of our funding is through our earned revenue. And we're very proud of that. But during, you know, in the case of pandemic, that whole model that we're proud of basically flipped upside down on top of us. So what you're seeing at the Minnesota Zoo over the last 11 months is closed gates, closed limited capacity, closed, and our parking revenues have obviously gone away. Our food and beverage has been closed or limited. Our retail, reductions in all of our education, all the camps have been canceled. All of our shows have been canceled. No more Zoomobile around the state of Minnesota and, you know, events with the exception of drive-through. So you can see the impact, you know, for us, it's been huge and we've had to react to that 30, you know, to that two thirds of our operating budget being basically turned off. So very unique state agency in a very critical situation. The impact of COVID, obviously, you know, started on March 14th and, you know, like everybody else, we customize our continuity of operations. Safety first, taking care of the people and the guests, but as you probably have heard, COVID affects animals as well, so we have to pivot and really go even further to protect the animals in our case. So a lot of safety precautions that we've done very well on safety here at the zoo. But the main thing we had to do right away is analyze our financial position. How are we going to get through this? How are we going to build a model to get through the pandemic? And unfortunately, with that one-third, two-thirds relationship, we had to act quickly and do major cost containment and cost cutting. We were not going to get helped by any PPP loans like our zoos around the country. We had to do this quickly and act quickly. So we suspended all of our contracts, all of our RFPs. We halted all of our major projects and we froze all of our expenditures. And this happened within days of closing. One of the hardest things that we had to do as a state agency is we had to move quickly. And in our case, we had to eliminate staff. And we had over 48 full-time staff laid off at the Minnesota Zoo. But the layoffs really affected over 125 positions throughout the entire zoo, which is a large percentage of our workforce. But our models showed that we had to take that kind of drastic cutback. So it was significant. These are people that did nothing wrong. And you know, so there's been a dramatic cutback of our workforce. And these, you know, all this, you know, reduced the cost by almost $8 million throughout the year. But, you know, we're still in a critical position and still have a long ways to go to maintain this facility. So, I mean, you know, I will go into more detail in the future, Mr. Chairman, committee members, but the zoo is in a very tough spot, but we do have a thoughtful plan for recovery. And, you know, if we can execute this plan, we can, you know, bring back these resources that the Minnesota Zoo offers Minnesotans. The governor's budget recommendation supports a financial model that allows the zoo operation to recover over the next 2 years. I mean, I think, you know, what we're seeing here is people love the Minnesota Zoo. and they need the zoo more than ever. We have built over 41 years invested in a really amazing state asset and a world-class destination right in Minnesota. And what we're feeling from, you know, people all over the state is this is going to be a big, an important piece of recovery. I don't think people are going to be traveling out of state and flying and taking big trips over the next couple of years. And the fact that we have a facility right here in Minnesota, a 500-acre zoo with 43,000 household members that can serve all Minnesotans, that they a destination within Minnesota where they can visit and then get back to their home safely, is going to be a big piece of recovery for Minnesota. So we are poised and ready to reopen and rebuild, but we're going to need a little help. And I thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the time. I'll come back and give you more of an update when we have more time. And I thank the committee members for their time today.
Thank you, Mr. Frawley, and I apologize for the delay, and we will have you back. Members, we are adjourned.